What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun, and I am delighted to be with you for another week. The Combine was this weekend, and that means a whole bunch of things. For one, it means we can start taking draft evaluations a little bit more seriously because most of the information we are going to have is in now. Everybody still has their pro days, but not a whole lot more is going to change. This is kind of the weekend where the most shifting and sliding goes on in terms of people's evaluations and their big boards and all that. And it's kind of where I choose to start paying really serious attention to the draft. I know a lot of people are in it way earlier, but I prefer to kind of hold off until the combine and then really dig in once people have like a lot more complete profiles on all of these players. So the other thing the combine means is rumors, and there's all kinds of rumors and conjecture, and I'm going to share a little bit and talk a little bit about some of it with you guys, but I also want to caution you that this is the time of year when NFL coaches, scouts, and GMs, and players' agents, and pretty much everybody who would have inside information lies their freaking tails off. They are all trying to get ahead and basically lie to either just keep their cards close to their chest or to prop up a player that they're trying to prop up, be it because it's their client or because they're trying to up trade value or because they're just trying to feel out a market or whatever. There's really no incentive for anybody to tell the truth this time of year. So take everything with a huge grain of salt, especially the press conferences. You know what? Like, I see a lot of people talking about the thing Steve Keim said about Josh Rosen and he's our quarterback for now. I don't believe him for a second. And maybe he will take Kyler Murray. There's a lot of rumors out there, but I don't believe that that was like a shot at Josh Rosen or anything. Like, I think that was the most prudent thing to say, especially if you're trying to trade the number one overall pick. And I think a good way to parse these comments is to say, okay, what would his goal be, right? If he's trying to trade the number one overall pick, does it make sense for him to say that? Well, yeah, kind of. And if he's planning on drafting Kyler Murray, does it make sense to say that? Yeah, well, sure, why not? Because it's not like somebody's going to, you know, leapfrog him. So really, no matter what his actual goal is, it makes sense for him to say that. So we don't really learn anything from him saying that. All that said, it's a little different when it comes from, you know, beat reporters getting scoops, and they do amazing work, but I can't help but suspect that sometimes people lie to them too, but hopefully not too much because those relationships kind of have to be established and there's a very delicate give and take there. But, you know, beat reporters have been lied to in the past, so we can also take that with a little bit of a grain of salt, but I still think that's, like, worth sharing. So Ben Gessling at the Star Tribune reported that the Vikings are essentially looking at, this is, like, really obvious stuff, but reporting it and having it kind of saying that they're actually doing it is, like, kind of comforting, because even though we could probably assume that, you know, they're doing things behind the scenes when it's radio silence for so long, it can be a little anxiety-inducing. So what they're doing is evaluating restructures for all their players with dead money. And we've gone over this a ton of time with all the mock off seasons we're going to do. We're actually going to do another one today. But basically, the four players that were named are Anderson Dejo, Mike Remmers, Kyle Rudolph, and Everson Griffin. All of those players have little to no dead money on their contracts and big cap numbers. And I've said this a bunch of times on the show, but just to reiterate, that's a really good recipe for a restructure because players want stability. They want security. They want to know that, you know, they won't just be cut at any moment, and adding more guarantees to their contract is a great incentive for players to take a lower number overall. Now, if you can get a player that's very loyal to your organization, like a Kyle Rudolph or an Everson Griffin, to take a pay cut, or even Anderson Dejo, you know, if you can get those guys to just take a pay cut for nothing in return, and sometimes players do that, that's amazing. But when it comes to planning out your offseason, you shouldn't really take that as a given because it just kind of depends on the player being nice and doing something out of generosity, giving up millions of dollars out of loyalty. And that's just not something that I think is reliable, even with the most loyal players to you. But handling all of those restructures, according to the Strib article, which I will link in the show notes as always, but according to that article, you know, you could probably piece together like $20 million in cap space just from those guys. And that's not even with, you know, converting all the signing bonuses to salaries and, you know, maybe cutting some of those players outright if you feel like you don't need them. There's a lot of options for the Vikings to create cap space. And it's why, you know, I like there was a tweet a while ago from, I think it was Charles McDonald, writes for SB Nation. I think it was something like the salary cap is a social construct. Like, it's just kind of an imaginary number. But speaking of that imaginary number, it was officially announced. It was $188 million, which is actually lower than people thought it would be. And that's bad news for teams like the Vikings that are very tight against the cap. It means that there's $2 million less than we thought there was. Now, if you've been listening to this show for the last couple months, you'll know that I've done a whole lot of shows on cat maneuvering, and in some of the scenarios, depending on the challenges we presented ourselves, you kind of have to work pretty hard. You have to do a lot of things just to make enough space to scrape by, and that's going to be that much more difficult now, and some of the old episodes we did were really, like, down to the dollar, and that extra $2 million you'd have to, like, go back into that plan and, like, cut someone else to make that $2 million. It's kind of a bummer. But I'm sure that the Vikings will be able to figure something out, specifically because there's just so many options for cap maneuvering and for making cap without actually cutting players or, like, making your team worse. There's a lot of different ways to change around contracts and figure things out. These restructures are part of it, and the other part of it is, you know, converting salary to signing bonus or finding ways to make a trade or something. It's definitely a problem, but one you can come out the other side of relatively unscathed if you play your cards right. Elsewhere in the news, real quick, there's a little bit of growing pessimism among the beat reporters and kind of source, you know, inside source types about Anthony Barr returning for the 2019 season. It seems like, you know, everybody's kind of said, we want to get a deal done, we're going to try to get a deal done, but it kind of sounds like there's a little bit too much space between the two parties. That's one of those times where I think I'm going to wait and see what happens come the start of the new league year and see if Anthony Barr, you know, sometimes they let these guys test the market, then they come back. We'll see what happens. There is some growing pessimism, but I'm not going to really comment on that quite yet. After all, it is an active negotiation, so whoever these beat reporters are getting their scoops from might have an incentive to embellish something one way or another to try to influence the negotiation. That's not to say that they're wrong, it's just to say that, you know, we can inject a healthy dose of skepticism in this time of year. So I'm going to step away to a quick ad break, and when I come back, let's talk a little bit about a mock offseason where we re-sign everybody, the retain everybody offseason. Let's keep as much continuity as we possibly can. And it gets kind of interesting, so we'll see what kind of stuff we have to do to make this work. I'll see you guys in a minute. All right, we are back. So let's talk a little bit about the unrestricted free agents that are slated to leave the Vikings. There's been all kinds of talk about Sheldon Richardson and Anthony Barr. I'm going to use the same numbers, I think, if I remember right, the numbers I used in previous podcasts where I've attempted to retain them. That's $12.5 million for Sheldon Richardson and $11.5 million for Barr. That might be a bit of a lowball, but I think any contract that these guys sign is going to be a little backloaded. So I think that that's probably fair and close to what the numbers actually would be. And we're going to do kind of the same thing for the rest of these guys. So I took every pending free agent for the Vikings, took it off of overthecap.com, and here's a list of them and the numbers that I'm planning on giving them. A lot of these guys are just kind of rinsing and repeating on the contracts that they were given in 2019, maybe plus a little or minus a little, depending on, you know, if their situation is different. For example, I shaved a little bit off of Latavius Murray's contract because he's, you know, growing a little bit older and the running back position has been devalued so quickly over the last few years. But for example, I'm upping Anthony Harris's contract for very obvious reasons. And also the proper tenders and whatnot that we have to deal with for the restricted and exclusive rights free agents. So moving down the list, we'll go to that Latavius Murray thing. I'm giving him $2.5 million a year. He has been a very efficient, very productive running back over the last couple of years, and he's been a pretty nice signing for the Vikings. So it's not like a punitive thing because I think his performance was poor. It's more that he plays the running back position that is so replaceable that we can afford to offer him less and he's more incentivized to take it because, I mean, look at the running back market. It's rough out there. I don't even think Le'Veon Bell's going to get paid as much as he wants to be paid. So, you know, it's not a, really about your skill as a running back. It's not a market that you want to enter as a player right now. So we can get away with offering him a little bit less. Moving down the list, I'm going to lump both Nick Easton and Brett Jones into the same category and give them $1.5 million each. And that's less than both of them made in 2018, but I'm okay with that because Easton's coming off an injury, so there's a, kind of a risk tax that would get imposed on him, and Brett Jones is coming off a year where he went from, like, perennial starter in New York to a backup player. You know, we're still going to retain him, but we're going to pay him like the backup that he has been for us. So moving down the list, we're going to keep Dan Bailey, who's scheduled to be a free agent. We're just going to give him the same contract that we gave him in 2018. It's $1.75 million. That's the same thing for Marcus Sherrills. We're going to hang on to him, even though he's getting up there in years. He made $1.75 million in 2018. We're just going to copy-paste that right into the next year. We're going to keep Amir Abdullah and Tom Johnson both at $1 million apiece. We are going to keep Tom Compton at $1.5 million. That is an increase over what he made in 2018, and it kind of makes sense. He started all year, but he didn't play well starting all year, so I don't want to increase him too much. I don't want to give him, like, the $2 million contract that, for example, Joe Berger got after he had a nice year and needed an extension. I don't think Tom Compton gets that, but I think he gets more than he only made $900,000 in 2018, and I think he would get more than that. We are keeping George Iloka, but we aren't going to increase upon his $880,000 contract because he didn't really play. Aldrick Robinson's going to come down for $1 million. Trevor Siemian's going to come down for $1.5 million, and that does it for the unrestricted free agents. So there's a couple of restricted free agents that need tenders, and the first one is Anthony Harris. So as a quick refresher on tenders, when you're a restricted free agent, it means a free agent that has accrued fewer years than like a typical draft pick. So this usually happens with like undrafted free agents that do well, like Anthony Harris. You can put a tender on them. Essentially, they hit the market, but you get first right of refusal. So if anybody offers Anthony Harris a contract, you get to match it. And if you put a big enough tender, we're going to put a second round tender on Anthony Harris. This is something we've already talked about why, but we're gonna put that on him. And that means that Anthony Harris can still take the other team's contract. Like, well, we get the chance to match the offer. And if he turns it down, or if we don't match the offer or whatever, we get a second round pick in return for Anthony Harris. So it becomes like a trade second rounder for Anthony Harris, which is an awesome deal for the Vikings. Usually no team will touch it. So we're gonna put slap a second round tender on him. That is just north of $3 million. We'll round it down for simplicity. And we're going to do an original round tender for Rashad Hill, which is a $2 million contract, pretty reasonable deal for a swing tackle, kind of backup tackle type. That is the same thing, except the Vikings wouldn't get the draft pick in return, but we still get, if anybody wants to try to sign Rashad Hill over, the Vikings get a chance to match before we do that. So we're going to do that. That's $2 million for Rashad. We are going to, for all of the exclusive rights free agents, it's kind of a similar deal. We're just going to offer them their same contracts, which, rounding up and down, it's about $500,000 apiece for Matt Weil, Cedric Lang, CJ Ham, and Josiah Price. So that was a whole bunch of numbers and a whole bunch of names, but adding it all up, we get $43.3 million in spending that we're going to have to figure out how to make elsewhere. And that is where the interesting part comes in. So we're going to kind of attack this. The goal is going to be to make all of that money and be able to re-sign every single person on the 53. However, we also need, we'll call it $5 million for draft picks. So call it like $48.3 million will be the goal. And if we can't get to that, we can start cutting off of this list to, you know, start to like make it a little bit easier. But let's see how much money we can create without actually cutting anybody. Because remember, the goal is continuity. We want the solution that keeps the roster as similar as possible to the 2018 roster. So first, we're going to deal with the guys we talked about at the top of the show. These guys with like high cap numbers and low dead money numbers that are like super cuttable, that we can probably shave a bunch off of the top. We'll call it like roughly halve their contracts in exchange for giving it to them all guaranteed. Essentially structure it something like, we're going to cut your money this year in half. We're going to fully guarantee it. And then we're going to put that money that we cut into, say, next year, into the 2020 cap, fully guarantee that and put an option on top of it. Give an extension, something like that, so that for the player, you're still guaranteed to get all the money you were going to get anyways, but now you have a greater option, an opportunity to, you know, an incentive opportunity to make more money if something good happens. And while that's a little reckless with the 2020 cap, right now this is a keep the team all the same right now exercise, so I guess we're just going to say that that's worth it. So for that, we can probably save about $15 million between the four of them. For Griffin, we can shave $6 million off of his cap number. For Rudy, we can shave $4 million. For Remmers, we can shave $2 million. For Sendejo, we can shave $3 million, retain them all, and save $15 million on the cap, which is a nice start to that giant number we have to try to knock down. So the next trick that we're going to try to use is something that we already did in a couple of the mock off seasons that we had to do, which is converting salaries to signing bonus. So that's going to happen with all three of the players who signed extensions last year, big money extensions. That's Eric Hendricks, Danielle Hunter, and Stephon Diggs. We might do that with somebody else. We'll see where that puts us. But just doing that restructure with those three players, so that takes the $8.9 million base salary of Diggs, the $9.9 million base salary of Hunter, and the $4.1 million base salary of Kendricks, and splits it across all the remaining 5 years of their contracts, including this one. So essentially you're taking their salary cap hit for this year and dividing it by five, and then spreading the remainder out across the rest of their contract, and just kind of kicking that can down the road. But for now, that saves roughly, I'm rounding, $7 million for Diggs, $8 million for Hunter, and $3.5 million for Kendricks. That all adds up to a total of $33.5 million is where we're at, including the 15 from before. That's not bad. We have less than $10 million to go, and we haven't cut anybody off of the list yet. So I'm going to step away to a quick ad break from that, and when we come back, we'll finish up and then see if we can't sneak in a mock draft for this as well. So I will see you all in a minute. All right, we are back. So the next thing we're going to do is something that, in my opinion, they should have done last year with Anthony Barr, but we're going to do it with Waynes and make sure we're not in this situation again with a first-round draft pick next year. So last year, Anthony Barr was headed into his fifth-year option. He actually played on his fifth-year option in a contract year, and that's where Trey Waynes is headed right now. He's going to make roughly $9 million to play on the last year of his contract, and in the next offseason, he becomes an unrestricted free agent. So what we're going to do is we're going to extend Trey Waynes. But to extend Trey Waynes, we can kind of throw in the deal that says, hey, you need to make a little less this year because we're really up against the cap. But, you know, we'll extend you for like 5 years and give you a big money deal, and it's all going to kind of kick in later, sort of like the way they structured things with Eric Kendricks. So we can probably get away with reducing his cap hit to like a $5 million hit right now, provided we take the $4 million that we're taking away from him and throw it into future years and make sure that that money is guaranteed. And we can structure the contract out that way to make sure that Wayne signs it, and we can make it a big money extension in later years because he's important. For now, he'll be playing on a little bit of a discount. Make no mistake, that will have an impact on the future, but we're not worried about the future in this particular exercise. So that gives us an extra $4 million to work with. So we're within $6 million of our goal. We're actually almost back under the salary cap in general, but we still have to make $5 million for our draft picks. So to make up the rest of the difference is actually only one more move we have to make. It is not that advantageous of a move, but it's the same thing we did with Danielle Hunter and Kendricks and Diggs, and we're going to do that with Linval Joseph, who has an $8.9 million base salary that we can convert into a signing bonus for the year, spread it across only 4 years left on his deal, not five, so he still does get like, it's up like 2.5 or something million for the next 4 years, and that does suck for the future considering all the other can kicking that we have done, so the future is very mortgaged, but that's not the idea here. And that will save us the $6 million we have left to go, bringing us up to the $43.3 million we were looking for. Again, a lot of rounding, so there's a margin for error here. But that does actually get us under the cap, and we managed to re-sign everybody and keep everybody, so we have basically the same 53 we were going with. But there's also the draft, so we bring those guys in, and then they probably kick some of the lower level guys off the roster via competition, but that is fine. So let's go into the draft. We'll skip free agency because we don't have any money left, and let's go directly into a mock draft. So looking at the 2018 roster, the obvious draft need here is offensive line. So when Garrett Bradbury is there at 18, I didn't think twice and I just took him. There was also TJ Hawkinson and Noah Fant available, and there were some other really intriguing players at other positions. I didn't overthink it. I went with the interior lineman. It'll be a little weird with Elflein and Easton and Remmers all competing with each other on that interior and then adding another guy in the mix. I'm not too worried about that position switch. I know we've talked a lot about the cost of position switches in the past. You know, there's a cost, and we've talked about this. There will be a cost to drafting a center like Bradbury because it means either you have to move Elflein or you have to move Bradbury to guard, and that is going to make one of those two guys less valuable than they already were. That said, I don't think continuity on the interior offensive line, considering how poorly they played, is really an option here. Keeping guys in the same spot is just kind of letting that unit be bad. So I'm okay with taking a center here and letting that shake out in camp. Moving on to the second round, I had it narrowed down between tackle Yadni Kajust and Debo Samuel, the wide receiver. I thought it was really even, and I couldn't decide, so I put it to a Twitter poll, which ended up being literally 51-49 Kajust. So apparently I was not the only one struggling with that decision. But for this, I went with the slight majority and took Kajust. So we went offensive line in rounds 1 and 2, which, considering the state of the roster after this exercise, you know, with the defense very much set and, you know, the receiving core very still very strong with, you know, Aldrick Robinson competing with whoever we get at wide receiver 3, you know, offensive line is clearly the biggest issue. So bringing in a couple of pretty good talents seems like a decent plan, albeit a narrow-sighted one. The next two rounds, I took a couple skill players in Jay Sternberger and Stanley Morgan Jr. Those were pretty easy decisions for me to take a skill player because, you know, the tight end room has always needed improvement. And again, right now, it's basically Aldrick Robinson and Laquon Treadwell fighting over that wide receiver 3 job, and I think adding another young body to that will be, like, a helpful boon to the competition. So, easy to take a bunch of skill players. I know I've gone all offense. I'm okay with that. I then took Ricky Walker as an interior defensive lineman. He is kind of a Zimmer-style guy. I mean, we're in the 6th round here, so he has lots of flaws. He's very undersized. But he wins, when he does win, he wins with an explosive first step and, like, penetration, and that's the kind of thing that Mike Zimmer likes. And then moving on, I actually drafted Brett Ripien with the second 6th-round pick, the compensatory 6th-round pick that the Vikings have. That may be a surprising decision, considering the fact that the Vikings have Slaughter and we did re-sign Trevor Siemian. But I think, again, adding competition to that room, you know, if you can have a room where, all right, your depth quarterbacks are the best two out of those 3 guys, I'm totally okay with that. And if Ripien doesn't make the team, it's just a 6th rounder. And then I pulled a classic Vikings move, which is taking an edge rusher in 7th round in Kyle Phillips. And then I took Miles Boykin, another wide receiver, in with the last pick of ours in the 7th round. So very offensive heavy. I think that's probably appropriate considering where the roster was in 2018. And I actually feel really happy with getting Bradberry and Kajust in the first couple rounds. I think that that's something that fans would really like. I think that would really help the Vikings really solidify the unit up front and add the competition that you need to go into camp and say, all right, whatever happens here, you know, whoever the best of these players is going to be a good player. So there it is, an off-season plan where you keep everybody and then make the team better in the draft. I think that this is a pretty unrealistic move because, I mean, we kicked so much. I mean, we have like an extra 10, 12 million between all of the players whose signing bonuses or whose salary we converted into signing bonuses. It is definitely not ideal. And the Trey Waynes thing that we did, a lot of that is just mortgaging the future, and the cap was probably impossible in future years. But we managed to do it. We managed to keep everybody and keep all the talent and you know, retain and have all that continuity. And hopefully that would make the team that much better in the 2019 season. So while this is like a very unrealistic exercise, I think it's interesting to just take a look at, like, all right, this probably required the most interesting cap work because you can't cut people. You know, when we did the cut Kirk Cousins thing, we could just outright cut people and replace them with better players. We really couldn't touch free agency. We had to make money purely before the start of the new league year. And it's kind of interesting to see just how much money can be made if you are really willing to commit. You know, before we even had to start mortgaging the future, we could make like $20 million in cap. Like, the Vikings have options here. And then depending on how aggressive they are in free agency and what kind of cap needs they create for themselves, they can continue to make money by utilizing some of these really nice extensions that they've gotten in the last couple of years. And I think that's just another testament to Rob Brzezinski. He's set things up so that, you know, you have these like 5-year contracts that you can spread signing bonuses over. It's a really nice way to create a little bit of short-term cap. And because the contracts are so long, you can really soften that blow. It really is a nice, helpful tool for exercises like this. So we probably won't do too much more cap stuff as we go on. We're going to be a lot more into draft stuff. I'll probably go revisit some of the old mock off seasons we've done and add mock drafts to that. But for now, this has been Locked On Vikings. Thank you guys so much for listening. I will talk to you all tomorrow. I'm not sure what about yet, but we'll see. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can always follow the show on Twitter at LockedOnVikings. Thank you all so much for listening, and Skol.